Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls of the wide, worldwide ultra running community, you are listening to nothing less than the greatest Trail Running Nation podcast on earth. It is the Trail Runner Nation podcast with me, a complete imposter here in London, England, and your two real hosts over there with a skeleton behind them very early morning in the studio. It's Scott and Dom.
All right, are we ready?
Yeah.
There's a bunch of old brothel hookers buried out here,
but I know it's on the upper edge and you guys have won a couple of awards. And
I've never prepped for a podcast ever.
Oh, that's what you're doing.
Okay, we'll clear that up. That will the group of the nation and podcast downloaders are very sophisticated.
They are.
They're unlike any other group out there. They're tolerant. They ignore our many imperfections, and they'll be able to substitute the word. No problem.
They will.
All right. Are we ready?
Yeah.
Welcome to another edition of Trail Runner Nation. I'm Don Freeman.
I'm Scott Warren. We have a couple guests with us today because this is, I think, our fourth edition of Trail Runner Nation magazine, TRN magazine.
No, it's TRN Audio
Audio Magazine.
No. Audio Magazine.
Audio Magazine.
Do we want to start? No, we don't want to start over.
Let's start up. Let's do it again.
Okay.
Welcome to another edition of Trail Runner Nation. I'm Don Freeman.
I'm Scott Warren, and this is the fourth edition of TRN Audio Magazine.
That's correct. And who are our guests, Scott Warren?
Well, first of all, I want to make a clarity. This is not Drop Bag. This is not Grab Bag. This is TRN Audio Magazine.
Which
it's very different.
It is only different because it has a different name. It's essentially the same thing.
And we have connected two hemispheres. We have Warren Pohl from London, England. Is that where you are today, Warren?
No, I'm in Frigiliana in Spain right now, but I am from London, England, and you wouldn't have known about the Spanish bit.
Do you spend any time in London, Warren?
I figure about half the year is enough. London is a beautiful city and a wonderful place to live, but it is also a horrible place to run and a wonderful place to leave. So by getting away for extended periods, I can enjoy it when I'm there and not moan about it when I'm not. So no, we're in Spain right now.
And to contrast the rainy, foggy London climate, we have the Southern California climate represented with Michelle Barton. Michelle, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
If you're not aware, she does have 80 wins and 24 course records. We like to mention that often because she brings it up.
Well, if we take her totals and we divide it by four, we still look pretty good. Warren, you can have a quarter of those wins and course records.
I'm impressed.
We have
80 wins around the table. No,
yes.
That's a pretty seasoned elite field we have here.
Combined, we have 80 wins.
Unfortunately, we can't even bring it up one win or one course record with the other three of us.
There's some fastest known times I have.
Oh, yeah, but on courses that have never been run by anybody else.
And I won't publish them because I don't want to be beat.
That's a good idea. Hey, so...
Yeah,
so
but you hang out with me, you might end up with a win. I'm just saying.
Only if I can hang on to your ponytail.
You want to do that, huh?
She does.
Well, it's long enough.
He does.
It's longer than Rapunzel.
There is probably room for three of us to hold on, including Warren, myself, and Scott. So give us a little background on what Audio Magazine is about. And what are the rules?
TRN Audio Magazine is very different from the Drop Bag and the Grab Bag. Very different. We come to the table with each of us with two to three topics that have not been pre-discussed amongst the others. And you make up a title of what you think your topic is, and you throw that out to the group. We discuss or try to guess what the topic is, and then we discuss that topic. It's really quite technical, Don.
So let's get started on this thing.
Ladies first. And this is Michelle's first audio magazine. Warren is a veteran of audio magazine.
Well, I hate
but
to just...
I've listened to your previous ones.
All right, so you are a veteran of sorts by distance learning. Let's start with your topic. What's your title?
What was
my
that?
Title is "Embrace the Suck," and that sounds like an airplane flying around.
Are you still with us, Warren?
Yeah, I'm afraid the place here has pretty thin windows, and a lot of the villagers like scooters.
They don't come down this end of the village too often, but when they do sound like aircraft. So I apologize in advance for those.
Not a problem, as long as you know what they are. So your title is
Embrace the Suck.
Embrace the Suck.
What do you think it is, Don?
What do I think that is? Well, I don't know. I think Embrace the Suck, could it be something to do with a bottle and hydration? I don't know that it's important to keep the fluid moving down the throat on long.
You have to suck on the bottle.
Suck on the bottle.
Embrace the Suck means you're not using water bottles. You're not using water bottles. You're using a bladder, and you have to suck.
Warren, what do you think Embrace the Suck refers to? And then Scott, you come up with yours.
I just did.
I think it's about embracing the pain, and the thing that sucks is actually the thing that's the best thing. So you should embrace that if you want to run a long way.
Well, Scott, no sense you weighing in because Warren just nailed it.
Yeah.
Give us a little dialogue about why you picked that topic and what it truly means to Michelle.
Okay. Well, you're an ultra runner. You're choosing one of the toughest sports on the planet. You want to challenge yourself to the core, to the bone. In these races, you suffer, but when you suffer the hardest, that's going to change you for the rest of your life. You feel most alive when you suffer. So, you know, basically, I'm just going to tell you a quote right now.
Okay, ooh, she came with quotes?
Beyond the very extreme of fatigue and distress, we may find amounts of ease and power we never dreamed ourselves to own. Sources of strength never taxed at all because we never pushed through the obstruction.
Okay.
So that's by William James. And I have, you know, paced Carnazes at Badwater 3 times. I've paced Gordy at States. Like, I've suffered and I've seen the best of them suffer. And we all suffer the same. Right? Hmm.
Well, so, yeah, I'll take your word for it because I haven't seen the runners up front because I'm too busy in the back. But I like
how many races have you won?
Well, I have 80 divided by 4, so I have 20 races I've won under my belt. But you're right. If there wasn't suffering, if there was no suffering involved in our sport, would we be attracted to it?
Yeah.
Does everyone suffer?
Ooh.
Well, she said yes. She says we all suffer.
So everybody suffers
at some point.
In different ways. Like, for example, the races that I won, I really don't remember any details because I really wasn't too broken. Obviously, if I'm out there, like, placing first or second, whatever, it's like I just don't have those, like, vivid memories of just, like, pushing so hard and, like, struggling and, like, you know, bad things happen. You're in pain. You're supposed to be in pain. But, like, when you persevere and turn it all around and finish and accomplish your goal, then, like, that means a lot more
Warren,
just, like, having the easy way.
Warren, have you ever suffered in an ultra?
I don't think I have ever not suffered in an ultra, but embracing it is a hard thing. There are times that you can, and I'm speaking here from the similar end and further behind to where you're talking about, Don, of the ultra field. So not at the sharp end, not winning races, but there's suffering in there. But that suffering is diminished with time and replaced with glory. But is that a mental trick, or did we really enjoy the suffering at the time? That's where I get caught up with it. Because somehow when you feel you want to run again and go back to those great races, the horrible times have been forgotten, but I guess somehow they've definitely made you stronger because you cannot progress in ultra running, I don't think, without going through them and without being shown something so horrible, you can't get the beautiful moments that you get on the other side of them. But I think it's the beautiful moments that get remembered that keep you going, or that's what it is for me. There, you know, it's not the pain that I remember that I think I really want to go through that again.
Do you think that you can prepare yourself for embracing the suck? I mean, we've made the statement that everyone goes through the suck. Can you prepare yourself to embrace it, Michelle?
Well, I believe on one of your previous podcasts, Tim Toffelson was talking about UTMB and how he just made peace with it. Like, he knew it was gonna hurt so bad and just be a total challenge. And he just like kind of disassociated. Like, do you know what I mean? Like he just mm-hmm. said, okay, it's going to be like this. And so it's going to be like this and whatever, like I'm just going to run my ass off regardless.
One of the golden nuggets that I learned early in my running career was to go into the race expecting or actually anticipating the wheels falling off the bus. Anticipate it. And when it happens, mm-hmm. you're actually like rejoicing. You're saying it finally happened. I've been waiting for this for 6-7 hours and now it finally happened. Woohoo!
And it's not as bad as you imagined it because you need to imagine an imagery and visualize something as catastrophic as you humanly possibly can.
Like
and
the Dementors from Harry Potter, right, Warren?
I didn't watch that. Warren?
all of them. It's compulsory over here. We have to watch it weekly. Yes.
Is it to remain a citizen of your great country?
Well, who knows what that entails since this whole Brexit mess. We're only thankful that Trump came in and took the spotlight off us on the world stage ever so slightly.
Yeah, well,
we do our part.
A bit more than all, slightly. We're watching the, what's his show that he did? The
Apprentice?
The Apprentice. We have to watch reruns of The Apprentice to remain citizens.
I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised.
Okay, hey.
You probably applied for that show.
Yeah.
Michelle, for a first-time entry, I think stellar.
She came strong. She has
the opportunity to do a couple more.
I know, but listen. Like, for example, you know when you break a bone and then that bone will heal? So, like, similar to that, your bone will heal and it's stronger in the broken spot. So when you're broken at a race at mile whatever, then you like come back stronger in the broken place. That's what I say.
That's pretty strong. You should have led with that one. That's good stuff.
That is powerful. I'm almost tempted to go and embrace some suck right now.
Yeah. I was thinking about breaking
and
my
you know
bone.
Stop it! But you know you're
out of context.
A lot of
this doesn't sound good.
What?
You'll get it on the replay, Michelle.
You'll have to listen to the podcast, yeah. Michelle.
Okay. Are we ready to roll through? Who's next, guy?
I think Warren, of course, is next.
Warren.
Guests first.
Warren.
Well, I would have pulled this out of a grab bag or a drop bag, but I forgot that. It's in an audio magazine, so I'm just getting it out here. And I've got Rocky IV, unbelievably, but I haven't just got Rocky IV. I've got the training team for the giant Russian Ivan Drago. I have his training team and all their equipment.
Huh.
This is pretty left field. So go as far out with it as you like. It will make sense, but I'm not certain you would necessarily be expected to get the clue. But we can probably have some fun trying.
So you're referring to Sylvester Stallone's motion picture Rocky IV,
which gives Don a huge disadvantage because he's never seen a movie in his entire life.
No, I've seen movies, and I've actually seen Rocky.
This is Rocky IV. This is the fourth one.
This
Freeman.
Is the one where he has the log on his back, and he's running up and down snowy mountains, right?
And you got it.
Thank you. And I think what he's referring to is cross training, that you need to cross train to be an efficient runner. You've got to look outside your normal activities and really get creative. And that's what that Russian did on, because I can't say his name like you did, as Sylvester Stallone had tried to mimic some of that hardcore training.
What do you
it
think
is
it is,
really
Michelle?
Close, but that's not the one.
Good.
But it ties into a thread nicely.
Okay, Michelle? What do you
I
think?
I have no idea because I don't really watch movies.
What?
All I know is The Eye of the Tiger.
Okay.
I think it was from that movie.
Maybe with boxing.
Maybe we'll close with that song. That's good. And Scott, what do you think?
I think it is. I think it's the opposite.
I don't know.
He was focusing on the Ivan Drago part of it, which is the technical side. So there was a comparison, a compare and contrast in that movie where Sylvester or Rocky was out with a log in the snow and chasing bunny rabbits and stuff. Oh, that was another one. And Ivan Drago was in the gym with all these high tech stuff and shooting up and that. I think that Warren's position here is that sometimes tech can help you train better. That's what I'm thinking.
Or tech is a distraction, and all you need to do is get back to basics. That might be it. Warren?
It goes full circle on both, which I've only just realized as this conversation has unfolded and you guys have piled in with all the angles there, because what this is Scott, you're exactly right. We're looking at technology. But the point is, well, the question, has technology actually made us any faster? Okay, so what we has the technology made us faster, or have athletes got faster and stronger? And if you have seen it, then you're going to know exactly where I got all this. And if you haven't seen it, then I would definitely recommend, it's from a TED talk by a guy called David Epstein. And his talk is called "Are Athletes Really Getting Faster, Better, and Stronger?" And it is 15 minutes of fabulous, right? And I'll just give you a little opener. His point, and he begins illustrating it by looking at the 100 meters. In 1936, Jesse Owens ran the 100 meters in 10.2 seconds. Fast forward to 2012, and Usain Bolt runs it in 9.77 seconds. So Owens would be 14 feet behind Usain Bolt. You go, well, okay, that makes sense. That is 80-odd years of human development. But he then unpicks it. Well, Jesse Owens ran on a cinder track. He didn't run on like a really nice, specially made running surface. He ran on like burnt wood dust. So he's losing energy there. Owens didn't start out of blocks. Usain Bolt started out of blocks. Owens had like a trowel to dig some holes in the dirt by where he started. So he had some traction. When they put it together, they looked, that apparently biomechanical analysis has been done of Jesse Owens' stride. And they've worked out that he would have been just one stride behind Usain Bolt, not 14 feet. In that race where Usain Bolt set that time, Owens would have been second against the current fastest men in the world. So this whole point looks at the fact that, did we get any stronger at all? Or did technology kind of cover the fact that we were the same? So there's a couple of things to come back to on this, because when it gets into the marathon, that gets fascinating. But I just wanted to throw it over to you guys and see, you know, is technology masking the fact that we're not getting better? Is it all down to shoes, professional training, the internet letting us share knowledge, amazing resources like Trail Runner Nation, being able to see so many people doing things that we think, well, hey, I could give that a go? Or are we genuinely evolving at the light speed that world records are dropping in the Olympics?
Ooh, that's good stuff. Warren, Michelle, do you have any comment on that? Would you like to go, or Scott or I? Michelle, we'll give you the first shot at it.
I think humans are humans, and I just don't really think you can, like, improve that exponentially so much. If, you know what I mean? Like, in just a little bit of time, I mean, everyone knows about that Nike sub 2 marathon, but they had all that help with the things and the shoes and the pacers and all that, but I don't know. Who knows if they were, like, taking any things to enhance their
time. So I don't know. The funny thing, I had this conversation with Bob that I was running with last night, and we were talking about the early days in Western states and some of the times the guys and gals put together there. And some of the technology, we were talking about GPS units and Garmin's first ones. They were big, long, rectangular devices that were on their arms, and almost, you know, you'd almost drag them around and need a backpack for them. And how they have evolved. And the people then were using trail landmarks for knowledge. This tree means we're 5 minutes from this. This means we're halfway to the next aid station. They had everything mapped out by landmarks, structural landmarks along the way. And now we don't use those as much as our own watch to see exactly where we are, how much further we need to go. So I think there's a lot of technology changes there for the course knowledge, but humans are creative and resourceful and use different methods. I may not be right on your point, Warren, but I wanted to say I was running last night. Scott?
He wanted to make a point that he did his training.
Yeah, I just wanted to say I was running and maybe you weren't, and so that's really my point. Go ahead, Scott.
I was just going to say, I agree. I don't think I'm a better runner because I have a better Garmin watch. But I'll tell you what, it sure is fun to have that Garmin watch.
You know, there's a lot of good, to keep us engaged.
I think it's more enjoyable. If you're a gear techie, I think it absolutely makes it more fun. But I don't think, you know, am I a better runner than I was 5 years ago? No, I don't think so.
Okay. Warren, expand. Do you have any closing statement or comments?
Well, I was just going to take a little diversion on this one to go in an extension from 100 meters and that example to go via the 1904 marathon, because while reading up about this one off the back of the TED Talk, I came across this story. I'll keep it short, but it's just fantastic. And that will bring us round to ultras, which actually can potentially flip this whole argument on its head. And so the 1904 marathon, again, David Epstein in the TED Talk, he makes the point about this. The 1904 Olympic marathon time, the winner won in 3 hours and 28 minutes.
Repeat that if you would, because you cut out right, and it's an important aspect.
Got you. So the 1904 Olympic marathon was won in 3 hours and 28 minutes. And the 2012 Olympic marathon was won in 2 hours and 8 minutes. So that's an hour and 20 minutes over almost 100 years. That looks phenomenal. Wow. Until you look that the 1904 Olympic marathon was perhaps the most farcical in history. Instead of starting in the early morning, they started sometime in the afternoon when it was 32 degrees, as we would call it in London, and 90 degrees, as you would call it over there. The only water stop was at 11 miles. It was on dirt roads, and the cars, the official cars that ran in front and behind the runners, created so much dust that one runner, what did he do? He nearly died from internal injuries due to inhaling all the dust. In fourth place, there was a Cuban postman who had hitchhiked to the start of the event, having lost all his money in St. Louis even. He had no run kit and had to cut the legs off his trousers to make them look like shorts, and still finished fourth. The man who initially won had dropped out at 9 miles, got a lift back to the stadium, and jogged in pretending to be the winner. Roosevelt's daughter was about to give him the gold medal when he did admit he was joking. And finally, the winner, a man called Thomas Hicks, his crew kept him going with a mixture of rat poison and brandy. The rat poison in small enough doses at the time was seen as a stimulant. And he didn't want to keep going, and he couldn't. And they actually had to carry him over the line while he sort of bicycled his legs vaguely in the air. And the officials decided to let that run. So when you look at all that, it's a miracle anyone even finished. That the hour and 20-minute difference did not just come from the evolution of the species. So that is a book on its own. But the flip to ultras and where David Epstein ends his talk is the one place where there is natural improvement left and still being seen is in the frontiers of ultra endurance, because these are frontiers that now we are only just starting to roll back, because within a blink in our human history, we don't have to look very far back to where the idea of ultra endurance was seen as very, very bad for you. You know, it would probably kill you the same way people used to think air travel would kill you and 100 miles an hour would kill you. Don, is that your hand? What do you... Are you coming in there?
No. I'm not used to being being observed so closely. We have a camera that's out. Now you're right on me this time.
Sorry, I didn't want to stop you if you were leaping in. But just to round up on it, then these frontiers in ultra endurance are somewhere that can still be broken, and the exponential growth of performance in ultra endurance sports is the testament to that. And David Epstein, even with his stance that technology may not, you know, may be carrying human improvement, suggested that in the arena of ultra endurance and ultra marathon, human improvement is still carrying it, which I just thought was a great one to bring this full circle, which I hadn't really realized until you made your Rocky point, Don.
Oh, did I mention in there that I thought of that when I was running?
Were you running last night?
In fact, I was. Funny you should mention that, Scott.
Yeah, I had a question for you. So, what is, you know, the 1 hour 59 minute ultra target? Is there one, or can there be? I mean, the bit, you know, we just went through this whole Nike thing that they televised worldwide on the web. That's the mark. The mark is to beat 2 hours in a marathon. Is there a mark for ultras?
I'll weigh in first, and I would think that our courses are so much different that we don't really have
From year to year, same course, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's a snow year and not a snow year. The route changes because of permits or what happens.
Clockwise, counterclockwise.
There you go. So you've got, and every race has its own flavor. So I don't think we have the traditional 159. Courses may have their golden mark, their prize, but I don't think distance has their prize.
How about we hear from a course record holder 25 times over?
Not me.
Not you.
Oh, Michelle.
Yeah.
So
what about it?
What do you think about, you know, a 50K, 50 mile? Do you think there's a time stamp that is a goal for everyone, or do you think they're more course related, or what's your thought?
I mean, I definitely think that people that are going for it, you know, they definitely have that they want to break the, say, 4 hours at a 50K, or they want to break like 7 hours at a 50 mile, or just different kind of benchmark things. But I mean, with our sport, like you said, it just varies so much. Like, it'd have to be like one of those races on the track or something to gauge it. But that's a tough one.
With all of your course records, Michelle, is there one that you think will never be broken? Mm-hmm.
Well, the one I am pretty proud of is the one Leona Divide 50 miler, because my times are not that far behind Meltzer and Jurek, and it was just kind of a magical day. It was really cool. Like, my daughter was out there, my dad was out there, all my friends were out there, and like everything just came together. And when I crossed the finish line, well, the race director is Kira Henninger, and she was my best friend, and she just like started crying and looked at me and said, I didn't know you could run that fast. And I said, I didn't know either. So it was pretty cool. So I'm proud of that, and it hasn't been broken. A lot of mine still stand, like most of them. Maybe one or two have been broken, but yeah.
Interesting.
Nice. So are we ready to move on?
Yeah, go ahead, Don. I'll let you go.
Okay. Title: Runners are stiffer.
Runners are stiffer.
Mm-hmm.
I'll throw my idea in the hat.
Good.
And it's because you're in the medical field. I think it has something to do with the ligaments and the fascia of a runner. That as you run more, those develop more and become stronger and possibly more elastic and stiffer.
Okay, Michelle. Or
I think ultra runners don't stretch, so they're just like automatically more stiff. But that's not necessarily a good thing.
All right, Warren.
Well, I think given that you've taken those two options, it must be the fact that we're all better in the bedroom due to the increased blood flow, the reduced stress, all those incredible benefits we get from getting out and getting the fresh air. Is that that's what it's got to be, right, Don?
Well, you know,
doesn't apply to a chick, bro.
But the benefits get shared around, right?
It should apply to a chick in certain situations. But Warren,
I have another guess too.
Oh please, yeah, two guesses are allowed.
Is it because we're cheap and we don't pay good tips when we go to
so
dinner?
You stiff
we
people.
Stiff people.
Hey, I pulled this out of the book. The
you did research?
Oh yes, deep research.
And he went running last night. Did he tell you?
Yeah, I actually ran last night and found and thought of this on competitor.com by an author that's known well around these parts, Matt Fitzgerald.
Yeah.
And he wrote this article, Loss of Flexibility Isn't Necessarily a Bad Thing. He writes this. You know, I'll try to paraphrase it because that's better probably than me reading it. That flexibility, that as we run, there's a lot of physical adaptations that are positive. We end up with, you know, we maintain some bone density. We get more mitochondria, which are the engines inside of each cell, right? We reduce body fat stores, all good things that have happened. Then why is it that maybe something that we think of as a good thing to be flexible, we get stiffer because they do measure it and find that runners are stiffer. And as it turns out, the answer, of course, is that the effect of running on flexibility is not hurtful, but in fact helpful, like all other things. the natural the natural tightening of the lower legs and connective tissues that occurs as a response to running allows the muscles to function as stiffer springs that are better able to capture energy from the ground impact and reuse it to propel us forward in motion than untrained legs. This provides improves running economy by allowing the runner to use less energy to sustain at a given pace. He uses these three words in the next sentence: boing, boing, boing. So it is a positive adaptation as ligaments thicken and become stiffer and have ability to move us forward and take energy, store it, and return it. So Mr. Fitzgerald has brought a little science to
that. Well, our friend Sock Doc would absolutely agree with you on that topic.
And Mark Cucuzella, who talks about, it's in his 8-minute and 26-second famed video of running economy, showing that we are actually spring-like. And what is that cadence that we need to, so we can capture that?
180.
180 steps per minute.
Michelle, I want to get your opinion on this. You said we don't stretch, and that may not be a...
drills that I...
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Oh, we need to hear about the drills. Scott's just talking until you think about your drills. So tell us about your drills.
Okay. So there's actually drills. One is called the spring, and one is called the pendulum. And the spring just really, engages all your muscles, and you just kind of, can run so much faster when you're doing that spring. And the pendulum is more like... for ultras to be kind of more efficient, like your feet are closer to the ground, not a shuffle or anything, but it's just like kind of to use the least amount of energy, but just to keep it flowing like a pendulum. But the spring is not like, I will do one leg drills of spring on the left and spring on the right. And then to do spring on both is hard to maintain. It's great. But I mean, I definitely agree. I would say that I don't stretch or anything, and I don't feel I need to. And so what if I'm more stiffer? I don't think that affects my results or anything like that. I do foam rolling, if that helps or counts.
We have decided it counts. And he cites this study as well. A study from Cal Poly in San Luis Obispo, California, compared running economy and flexibility in 21 male runners. The research found an inverse relationship between lower leg joint flexibility and running economy. In other words, the harder it was for a runner to touch his toes, the more economical his running was. So, I mean, there's some science that backs up some of the hypothesis that you spring, you get more bounce on your step.
Well, it makes perfect sense in some ways, because what have they been doing in racing cycling forever? They've been trying to make the bike stiffer so the transfer of power gets to the back wheel without getting soaked up by the frame. And you put it like that, you're like, well, of course, because all that energy that you're putting out, if you're a big sort of yoga ace jelly, all of that energy is going to get dispersed through all those nice loose joints that you've got. And instead of being transferred into pushing you forwards, I think the tricky bit, though, is until we reach Michelle's non-stretching nirvana, the rest of us have to go through getting hurt a lot, seeing Don a lot, and then sorting ourselves out a lot until we can somehow maybe reach that magical day. And the last time I thought I'd reach the day I didn't need to look after my body the same way, because it really adapted this ultra running, I was running the best I'd ever run, I went down with some horrible Achilles injuries that nearly needed surgery and took me out for a year. So I guess it's a balance.
And he does mention the balance. He does warn that as we are wearing shoes and certain ligaments, and the Achilles shortens up, and as we sit in chairs and our hip flexors tighten and shorten up, there's some flexibility that needs to be addressed there. So there are areas that stiffen up that don't need to, and others that are adapting and allowing us to function well. So the body knows what it's doing, and sitting too much is not a good thing. So go ahead, Michelle.
That's why it's beneficial to be in our zero drop shoes, I believe, because it's better on the Achilles and it's more natural. It doesn't throw your body out of alignment like those shoes with the lift.
The high heels?
Yeah.
You know what's interesting, Michelle? I'm glad you brought that up, because I've been dealing with a little bit of plantar fasciitis, and I was just doing some Google searches on it to see if there was anything out there that would help. And one of the first articles that came up was by a doctor that said the reason why you have PF issues is because you don't have an arch support. You need to get some arch supports in there, and you also need to have an elevated heel. I just thought that's crazy that that's still a message that's out there in the internet sphere. That's completely
wrong. That's like the exact opposite of what you want to do.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's almost like there was sorry, go on, Michelle.
No, you go.
No, you. I insist.
Hey, did I mention I ran last night?
Did you win?
No.
No. Yeah. I came in second. I podiumed, but there was just two of us.
Do you ever run in the daytime? It's got to be a vampire run at night.
At night, a lot of night running because I don't want anybody to see what I'm doing. What's your comment, Michelle? I'm ready.
I believe that your body and your feet and everything you're born with has everything you need. Like, you don't need any insert or whatever extra insoles. Like, let your body do what it's like made to do. That's why I love the Lunas.
Yeah,
it just makes you stronger.
If people don't know, Michelle is a very big advocate of Luna sandals, which is very minimal shoe wear. Mm. Or it's not even a shoe. Minimal footwear.
There you go, footwear.
Right.
Like Scott, a thong for your feet.
It's like racing in a thong, yes. Where do you strap the bib on a thong? That's hopefully Scott's topic. What's your topic, Scott?
I'm going to switch mine now.
Okay.
Here is my article submission title. Yes. It has been submitted to the editor. We will decide whether it will be published in the TRN magazine.
Good.
Audio magazine.
Yes.
Here it is. Would you like ketchup with that?
Oh.
And you can't answer, Don, because you know what it is.
I have no idea.
Yeah, you do. Because I stole the idea from you earlier this week.
Oh, I've already forgotten. Warren or Michelle?
Would you like ketchup with that?
Would you like ketchup? Oh, yes.
I think I got the best title. I think I stumped you.
Are we just in an American aid station? Because I know that often an American ultra aid station is indistinguishable from the all-you-can-eat buffet in a Las Vegas hotel compared to the old cup of tea and a biscuit that you might get in the UK at a fell race, for example. Is that it? And there's like now ketchup dispensers there for anyone who wants that on their hot dogs, sliders, and the baked potato things that you have.
And correct me if I'm wrong, Warren. They just splash that tea in your face and you open your mouth. Not even a real chance.
They spit it in your face. That's the only way they can keep it warm out on the bog.
Boy, it is rough in that area. You have really earned your belt buckles or
your
t-shirt.
You got to embrace the suck in the UK.
Embrace the suck.
The belt buckle.
Like, what are you putting ketchup on?
Okay. No, he's just creating a title. Michelle, so what do you think he's
referring to? First of all, let me tell you that Warren is nowhere close with his guess. Nowhere even close. Michelle, what do you think? Would
this
you like ketchup
to,
with that?
To racing and ultras?
Yeah, racing or running
or
something.
The only time I've eaten or seen someone eat, like have ketchup is like Carnazzi's at Badwater. You have a ton of French fries, but he wouldn't eat it unless it was doused in like gallons of ketchup. It couldn't be dry.
That's a very very good answer, but completely wrong.
Does it have anything to do with the condiment, ketchup?
No, has nothing to do with the condiment.
I happen to read now. Go ahead, Michelle.
I know. You're what? Trying to catch up to me, but you can't.
Ooh, that's also very, very good answer. Incorrect.
So what is it, Scott? Tell us what you're
So my topic, my article, even though the title is a little misleading, the content of my article is it better to keep up or to catch up? And you can take that in many different ways, whether this is your nutrition on a training run or in a race. Is it better to keep up on your nutrition or to not and have to catch up? Is it better to keep up on your sleep or to catch up on your sleep? That's my topic, and the article is about that.
And what about like your pace, like keeping up with pace if you're racing or catching up, like pulling a Meltzer,
exactly.
Like coming stealth mode from behind?
That's a good point, and that's right on topic.
Right.
Yeah, I don't think there's any advantage to catching up. I think that if you are trying to stay hydrated, you better stay hydrated, because drinking five bottles all at once isn't as effective as dispersing those five bottles throughout your race. And the same goes for sleep. Once you, if you're in a multi-day race, if you fall behind on that, you're gonna have to pay the dividends of that. You're gonna have to really put some hours in to catch up. And I don't think there's any catching up in our sport. We need to manage so we don't need to play catch up. Warren?
I think that pretty much nails that one, because with nutrition and hydration, I think it's not about being ahead or behind. It's about being on time. But the difference is, being on time is not related to your watch. It's related to your mind and your body. And because you might decide, if I got to eat or drink every 40 minutes, well, that just may not work. You might go 3 hours when you don't want anything. You might go half an hour when you want something every 5 minutes. But as long as you're tuned in to the signals your body's giving and you're aware of how to ride that wave, then you're never keeping up or catching up, because you're always exactly in the pocket. But for running, I think for Michelle up there at the front end, I think there's a lot of keep up, because you want to be on your pace, and even that pace may be faster than you expected, and then you've got to go into a whole world of managing that. And I think for others of us, maybe catch up. Like, everyone can be a hero in the first half of the race, but you want to be a hero in the second half. And you know, there's a lot to be said for that approach. But I don't think that's a hard approach to win a race with, I would imagine. But even though we do have 20 wins each around the table, as they are all Michelle's, we probably have to defer to her expertise on that.
You know, I think that's really important. The thing that is also intriguing to me, going back to this Nike 2-hour marathon thing that they just did, one of the advantages that these runners had, in addition to many, which they had a pace car, they had a very nice flat track, was they were able at any given point to take in nutrition or take in hydration. They weren't limited like in a normal marathon to the aid stations. So at any given moment, they could have whatever kind of nutrition that they were used to or their body needed, or whatever kind of hydration they needed that was at their disposal at any instant on that track. And I think that has something to do with, and makes sense, that it's better to keep up than catch up. So in two metaphorical senses, catch up is bad for running.
And this is where, still get it at aid stations, though? They still do get catch up at American aid stations. I was right about that, though.
We have the potatoes, but we don't put ketchup on them. We put salt on them.
It's not a new gel flavor from Google or someone.
It could be. All right, Michelle.
I think that, like, it's pretty easy. You know, if you're running with a vest, you're going to have your proper nutrition and your hydration and whatever bars or gels you're using. But, like, for example, at Don's Tahoe 200, that's going to be a huge challenge, because you're going, like, marathon in between, and most likely you're going to be dry. And even if you have your life straw and maybe want to drink out of a creek, that can be dry. And so, like, that can really affect your race, I think. But in typical ultras, like, you're going to know you'll be fine. Like, there's going to be aid stations at least every 10, 15 miles or closer.
And that's probably one of the reasons why these hydration vests have become more popular, I think, over the last few years, is the ability for you to carry your own stuff and have it whenever you think you need it.
Yeah, it's important.
So I think we're back around to the front of the circle here.
We're back at the front of the pack.
Michelle, what's your next submission?
Four. Yep. Less is more.
Less is more.
Less is more.
We'll have Warren take his first crack.
Awesome, because I have, like, imagine, you know, when you see someone flatline in a movie, that's kind of, well, Don, you don't watch movies, I understand, and Michelle, you don't watch many, but, you know, that's what my brain just did. It just went, like, completely empty. Less is more. Okay.
Let me throw something out there. So, less is more. Okay. this might help stir it up a little bit. Maybe we train too much. Maybe we train too much. Maybe some of these high mileage 100 mile mandatory weeks, if you want to run a 100 miler, is just ridiculous. Less is more. Get with it, people. Just get your body in shape, do some cross training, and do some running, but you don't have to put in huge, huge miles. So that's my less is more. Back to you, Warren.
That's brilliant. That gave me enough time for like a little spark in what's left of the brain to actually come up with something. And frankly, I'm going to go nutrition on this one, because there are a lot of products out there that come with a schedule on the back that kind of recommend you should take them approximately every 5 minutes and have at least 10 of them before you've even got out of bed on race day. With the inevitable result that you feel sick, go slow, feel horrible, and end up spending more of your time in the bushes than running your race. And that's assuming you even do get to the finish. So I'm going to go for that one, that when it comes to nutrition, less can certainly be more if you're in tune with where you're at.
No, that makes me think about 33 Shake is what it makes me think of. A little plug for your company.
Just bring it full circle.
I've heard of them. I hear they are really good.
We are shameless.
There's something magical about the chia. You know that, right?
Yeah. Well, he knows it very well.
Absolutely.
Because I'm on the Corima, Mas Corima, and that has chia and pinole. So
chia is magical stuff.
Scott, what do you think, Scott?
You know, I am going to take a little bit of a sidestep. I think less is more also equates with keep it simple, stupid, the KISS method, which sometimes we end up doing way too much and making a training schedule that is way too complicated, or try to make our diet, nutrition just way too complicated. We need to just simplify. That's my guess.
Okay,
all Michelle. Of those are amazing guesses, but I was thinking more along the lines of accessories and technical gear doesn't make you a better runner. You make yourself a better runner. You get out what you put in. There's so many options for gear nowadays. You can end up looking like an astronaut, like sounding like a Christmas tree jogging down the trail. You have the clothing, like X-Bionic, that is supposedly going to bring down your heartbeat 5 beats per minute. And I mean, there's tons of cool stuff out there, but you should just do the research, buy the best gear for your adventure race. And I mean, you got to think back to 1974 when Gordy was kicking ass with his pancake syrup container running Western States in his cotton socks and cotton shirts. But I'm not going to put down the shirts because he's still into the cotton shirts and all that. But I would say just focus on the training and your goals and have fun instead of putting on all that crap. Like you see these Instagram posts of people with pictures making the flat person the night before the race. And you see like basically the shoes, the calf sleeves, you see the poles, you see the squirrel's nut butter, which I love. So don't get rid of that. But you see the whole shebang, right? And that is for a 5K.
Well, you know,
I
have to admit that at a recent race, I took a picture of a runner that was running ahead of me. So in no disrespect, because he was ahead of
me.
Okay. So he was beating me.
Yes.
But I took a picture because this was a shorter distance, a 50K. And this guy had a hydration pack with two water bottles on the front, a bladder on the back, and you could tell this thing was probably a 30-liter backpack full of stuff with aid stations that we know were only 4 to 5 miles apart. And I was thinking, this is a little bit, I probably had a 20-pound pack on. And I thought, this is a little bit overboard. And in fact, you could probably, the winners of that race probably didn't even have a water bottle handheld with them. They were just going from aid station to aid station with a pair of dolphin shorts and a shirt if they were lucky. They had shoes on.
Yeah, you don't need much for a 50K for sure.
That's a good point.
And particularly if you've waxed, as we were text discussing earlier, then that also helps with the less, you know, less hair, more speed type
less is more.
Equation. Less is more.
Vehemently,
right?
I think everyone should be waxing, by the way.
Well, what about
that,
the...
That is a great tip.
Everybody, Michelle.
Michelle, do you...
Everybody.
Yes.
Well, I see a little issue there because, Michelle, you have a lot of hair on your head. And if you waxed completely, you would still be ahead of the hair game. All right. So who's up, Scott?
Warren is up.
Warren.
Okay, well, I did have a skateboard, which was going to be quite fun, but it kind of relates to some stuff we talked about before. So I'm going to just put that one back on the cutting room floor or in a bag or something and maybe bring it out another day. So instead, I'm going to go straight to my boombox. I've got a great, it's got a twin cassette deck. I can carry it on my shoulder. It's got a 59 band graphic equalizer. We're right in the 80s. I've got a giant boombox on my shoulder, and that's where we're going. So, you know, where are we at with that one, do you think, as some kind of an article? Do you think we've got something for the audio magazine?
Warren, do you have a piece of cardboard folded underneath your arm that you're going to lay out and break dance on?
I can still do the windmill, I believe, if I'm drunk enough. But that doesn't happen so often anymore, so I might be quite out of practice. But I think I've still got a windmill in me on a good day.
Michelle, what do you think that title means?
Maybe it means like you should definitely be listening to a lot of music when you're running.
Okay.
I don't know.
Yeah.
What do you think, Don?
I don't know. I think that... music devices have shrunken and they're much smaller and they can be misplaced easily. And we don't walk around with 30-pound music devices on our shoulder. You just a simple little MP3 player and some wireless headsets, and you're off and running.
I'll throw in my guess, and my guess is improvements in technology. Going back to what Don was saying, the first GPS watch that was out there was a mini computer strapped with mini straps onto your arm, and now it's looks like a normal watch, very small. So I think that's where you're going. The technology has improved.
We talked about that on my run last night. Warren, what is it that this truly means?
I didn't know you were running last
yeah,
night.
Yeah, I ran last night. Yeah. Right. Warren,
oh,
what,
great.
Yeah, thanks.
His titles are too mysterious. It's not fair. I like to win, and I'm not winning with Warren.
Well, I can tell you, Michelle, that the best thing is everybody won there, because that's kind of where I'm going. I've picked out a hardy perennial, frankly. We could come around with this every week, but running and audio, okay? So easy for us now. So many options, so many amazing podcasts to fill our mind. Like, I don't know, Trail Runner Nation, perhaps. I've heard that's a really good show. And so many great, you know, we got that accessibility. It's lightweight. We got Bluetooth headphones, this, that, and the other. But none of that technology takes us away from the fact that running is a beautiful opportunity to disconnect. And I don't care how small the MP3 player is or how good your Bluetooth headphones are. It's still another thing to charge, another thing to remember, another thing that goes wrong. And sometimes music can be an awesome lift, and sometimes it's just really quite tiring to listen to and you just want the peace and quiet. So I'm just throwing this out there in a great big splurge of where are you all at with music or no music, podcasts and audiobooks, yes or no, when, if you do use them, and what strategies do you use for, if you do use them, having that audio on the run? Because I have yet to find a happy place, and the happiest place I always find is just, forget it, I'm leaving the whole lot behind.
Any thoughts, Scott? You know, I've enjoyed running with people and talking, and I would never plug in at that point and listen to anything, and the time goes by so fast with someone.
You're right.
Much slower than without audio or with audio. Just by myself, it passes slower. It just time moves so quick when you get engaged in a real conversation. So I love the talk. During a race, I carry the audio. This is important as my shoes, but I never turn it on because I'm busy thinking about the race. It's almost a crutch or a safety net for me. I don't know why I need it, but I just want it there. So I do carry it.
That's where I stand on that. I like to be distracted on training runs. I love listening to them when I'm by myself. I love the books. I love the podcasts. It's me time that I get to dig into some thoughts if I don't have any of my own. I love the audio on some runs.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Although I have to say that for me, there's a balance. Mm. I love running with people, but I also really enjoy running by myself and having that time to mm-hmm. think and ponder mm-hmm. and maybe even meditate, if you will.
Michelle, what percentage of the time do you run solo or run with somebody?
I love to run alone, bottom line, pretty much. I mean, I don't know really why, but I don't run with people that often.
It's because you're so darn fast. No one can keep up.
I'll be nice if you run with me for like 5 minutes.
do you listen to
when
music?
When I'm training, yes. Yes, definitely. When I'm training on my normal trails, like during the week, I listen to your podcast. I listen to music. I love it. Like, I love running and listening to music. When I'm racing, also, I love to listen to music, not like books or podcasts. But some of the races that I'm doing and have done, like in Canada, will not allow you to listen to music because there's grizzly bears. And so you have to, like, either have no music or have some speaker blasting. So that's kind of different. But I kind of try to avoid the races that don't allow music because I just love music.
Hmm. You know, just because I have music playing, I don't think it's going to help me with the grizzly bear. If a grizzly bear wants to have me, he's going to have me. And
exactly right.
And I'd prefer not to hear him coming. I just want it to be over. Just let it happen.
But with what about the tech setup then, Michelle? If you're regular with the music, because I feel like I'd like to be able to bring a bit more of it into my running, but I have not found, I got the kind of ears that headphones fall out of, like, and I don't really like the cables and they get in the way and I always end up snagging one.
Yeah.
I mean, and then I can't be bothered to carry any extra equipment. What do you use? What do all of you use? Put it out there. What do you guys use to bring the tunes to the run successfully when you want them?
Hey, Warren, we have you covered. And in fact, I'm embarrassed that you don't know this already from the mini podcast that we have been talking about, Aftershocks, the wireless headphones that are bone conductive. So you don't put them in your ear. You don't put them on your ear. They actually go around your ear and rest on the bone in front of your ear. So you can hear the grizzly bears. So you're safe.
But how long does that last? Like, those usually don't last very long.
Well, maybe not. Maybe not long enough for you, Michelle, but for a training run, I mean, the batteries will last for like 8 hours.
Oh, gotcha.
So they're good for any training run. I don't think you're going to be doing
that. And did you say they're Bluetooth as well?
Yes. So
tried them? Do they work? Because that sounds an interesting solution to several things I've not yet been able to fix on the audio side.
We are going to take care of you, Warren, because you came on the show today and brought this up. We're going to send you a pair. Because
that's
awesome.
Did Christmas just come early? Really? Wow.
They are the most
amazing.
Do you
think next time I might actually be able to go running and listen to some stuff when I want to? Because there are times when it's nice, but I've just always had to go down the purist route, which I'm very happy with, but I feel technology has got there, but I've just never made the headphone thing work or bringing a spare MP3 player or whatever.
But what are you using for your music? Are you using your iPhone or are you using an iPod? What are you using?
I generally default to the phone for me, I think, but I've just never got the headphone thing working.
I just use the generic like Apple headphones and it's fine.
But you have those magic ears.
No, I don't. But I snag it.
I can't keep those things in if I just walk across the house.
Okay.
Okay, ready to move on? Who's next up? I'm up on the list. Okay, my title is Rumpelstiltskin. One word. A fairy tale made popular in Germany.
I can tell you already what it's about.
You're the last to guess. You're the last to guess, Warren and Michelle.
Okay, well, you know, if you had some screen directions, you'd see me typing Rumpelstiltskin into Google really quickly to find out what he did.
Michelle.
Wasn't he sleeping for like 100 years and then he woke up when he like saw you run by with your awesome headphones?
I think you're close, Scott. This is what this is Don's favorite topic of all time, dealing with running, and it's sleep. You have to have sleep. That's when you can recover. That's when you're building your when your body is recovering and becoming stronger. If you go out and you pound the pavement and you don't sleep, your body is not going to be strong. So it's sleep.
It is sleep. Exactly right, Scott. You nailed it. Perfect. In fact, there was a study in 2017 by Thomas Riley and Ben Edwards at the Research Institute, and I want to throw this over to you, Warren, because it's your fellow countryman, of Sport and Exercise Science in Liverpool, John Moores University in the United Kingdom. So is that's a place we can trust. It's a good resource. And here's what they did. They found out with some limited sleep the night before, when they would test these athletes, that the muscles had all the same ability to contract with the same intensity and the same oxygen demands. All of these things were just the same from the neck down, whether you had sleep or not. These are motors that work regardless of what's happening. And they found that as people were running, their oxygen demands and everything on the treadmill was maintained, but they perceived it as more difficult. It seemed more difficult with the sleep, yet they were measured the same physiologically. Another study came by that was from, let me find this one. Here we go. That from Kane Spiegel, Rachel Laporte, and Eve Van Carter in 1999. And this has been referenced 1,500 times. They took these young men, 18 to 27 years old, and they had them sleep only, what did they do? They slept 6 hours. For 6 days, they only had 4 hours sleep. That's their deficit of sleep. So they went in there and they had some deep sleep deprivation. At the end of the week, the subjects had poor sleep for six nights in a row, exhibited hormonal levels that could have been mistaken for those 50 and 60 year olds. So 18 to 27 year olds deprived of sleep for 6 days, 4 hours a night. They measured their hormone levels, cortisol for stress, and you can name all the hormones that are important to us throughout their running, testosterone or whatever they might be. And they found that they were equivalent to almost twice their age, 50 to 60 year olds. And that's pretty important. So sleep is critical. And there's a reason we feel better when we sleep and feel like we can run forever. And there are times that we feel twice our age. Well, there's evidence that we are at least twice our age. So, again, sleep, real, real important. Any thoughts on that? Any experience with that?
Yeah.
Well, I think...
I mean, I've had really good runs on 4 hours of sleep before, and I've done races on like 4 hours of sleep, but I think you do much better and you can think clearer and just have more power and energy when you have like 6 hours or seven. But I think everyone is super different with that. Like, I have a cousin, his whole life, he needs 4 hours. Dean Karnazzi, 4 hours. Like, some people, I think, just don't need it. But I can tell a huge difference if I get 4 versus 7 hours. Like, I feel like awesome with seven.
And that's what Riley and Edwards said. The first study, muscles are just as strong. They perform just as well. But it's your mind that fatigues and is tired, and it's running everything down below and perceiving your fatigue mm-hmm. and making you imagine some tiredness down there.
I don't think, and I wonder if they reference this, I don't think scientists know why we sleep. They actually don't know. They actually don't know, unless it has to do with the mind shutting down, but they even measure the mind work when you're sleeping, and it doesn't really shut down. It just goes into a different phase, if you will. But I don't think scientists have proven that they can't tell you why you need to sleep. They know you have to, but they don't know why.
Well, you certainly don't want your brain shutting off completely. It's still doing a lot of work in regulating, you know, a lot of your basal homeostasis, keeping yourself level. So don't go to sleep, brain. That's called death.
Yeah, not,
but
not,
I heard that
not,
your brain
not too
works
deep.
Better at... Yeah?
Go ahead, Michelle.
Go, Michelle. Go, go, go.
I just heard that your brain works more when you're sleeping than versus like watching TV, and you burn more calories sleeping than watching TV. I never watch TV, so I don't know. But
I read that the brain uses 25% of the calories. 25% of the calories.
When you're sleeping?
No, just as you're moving about your business.
As
25%,
a percentage.
25%. That's a lot. That means it's creating a lot of electrical activity and sending nerves, impulses down nerves. I mean, it's a very active component. 25%.
You know, I want to throw in a little golden nugget that someone taught me early in my running career also, and I think it may have been you, Don, is it's very difficult, especially at a new race or in your first few races, to get a good night's sleep before the race. So it's imperative. So don't worry about that night before and stress out about the night before. Make sure you get a good night's rest two nights before. That's the most critical mm-hmm. one. And then enjoy the anxious vibe that you get the night before, and don't worry about that. Just get a really good night's sleep two nights before.
Hmm. I'll take credit for that. That sounds pretty wise.
I think that's completely golden there, because who sleeps well the night before a race? And then if you beat yourself
up,
oh no, I'm not going to perform. Okay, so you are that person.
And it's
the one.
Yeah, I can sleep super well the night before a race.
And it's despite that she had three cappuccinos like an hour before she went to bed.
For dinner.
I had three mistos.
You will be the exception to that rule. But for everyone else out there who's fretting that they're not getting their sleep for their performance the night before, the point to put it in the bank earlier, you know, this is not a catching up thing. You've got it in the bank and it's there in place. And just to flip quickly onto the scientific side via Scott's question of, you know, that's quite likely scientists don't know why we sleep. And in my limited experience of studying sleep back in the journalism days, looking at sleep hacking and how can we reduce our sleep cycle and can we get into deep sleep more quickly, and thus should we sleep polyphasically for better performance, and how could that then be used in long distance ultras? Two things to come out of that were that, scientists still, for everything they know about the brain and sleep, don't know really why we sleep and a lot of what's going on when we're asleep. But for anyone who is interested in manipulating their sleep for performance, even though there is a lot of life hacking knowledge out there on how you can do this, and certainly some of those techniques, like the minimum effective dose for a nap is 20 minutes. That's a pretty good one in a long distance ultra. If you are going to sleep, practicing getting in and out of that might be worthwhile. But if you want to go shortening your sleep cycle and messing around with that, the quote that sticks with me every time is the last guy I interviewed who tried it and done a lot of work on himself and it hadn't gone so well. And he said, "You will never know how much you value regular sleep until you break it." Because his studies led to him totally sending himself largely insomniac. And, sleep is quite, we might not know much about it, but its value just can't be understated, and mess with it at your peril.
Hmm. I like that. I like the 20-minute the nap thing. And last year at Tahoe 200, I was surprised to learn that I slept, because Bob added it up, 10 hours. 10 hours. What the heck was – I mean, there's guys that didn't sleep at all, and like Mark Tanaka and Victor Ballesteros, zero sleep. I could not do that. And I had a longest sleeping session of 4 to 5 hours because I was just fatigued. I couldn't catch up like it was your topic, Scott. I could not just keep pushing on. And I'm going to do what you just talked about, Warren. I'm not going to sleep for a full hour. I'm going to sleep three times for 20 minutes each time. I'm going to implement that. There won't be a sleep station in all those places, but I can just sleep on the side of the trail. Instead of a 1 hour sleep, I'm going to do 3 20-minute, and I'll bet you I'll be ahead of the game for that. Thank you.
And you have the option to do four, and you're still ahead of the game.
Yes. Well, three times
two is 60.
But you
have to practice that. Like,
is an hour.
I know, but you slept for 10 hours. What I'm saying is you could put a fourth one in there and still be better off.
I'm just going to take the normal hour sleep and break it up in three different sections and spread them out. Instead of crashing for an hour, I'm going to crash three times for 20 minutes.
Okay.
That's what I meant.
But how can you plan that?
Definitely worth a go.
Yeah. Thank you. Michelle?
Because, Don, you're running the Bigfoot 200. So, I mean, I would never just plan, okay, I think I'm going to sleep like 20 minutes at mile 120. And then this, like, you just want to kind of, like, however you feel, if you're tired, then sleep, right?
Exactly.
Like, I know some people plan it, but, and Candace was saying that the people that regularly nap those 20 minutes, like, did better than the people that aren't used to that. And they're just, like, staring into space, sitting in a chair with a blanket on them, and then just, like, come out of there not much more refreshed. But if you're, like, regularly used to taking those 20-minute power naps, then you're like, boom, let's go.
So I'll include that in my training, Rocky style. I'm gonna take a nap often throughout the day. So that's good. I'm going to teach myself to doze off and to get back up. And I will use
I think that the last one to just throw in on that quickly, that the last quote I got from a guy who was telling me how to do it is, you will feel hideous when you wake up. The work will have been done, because if you practiced it, you can get into that sleep cycle. You know, it's the minimum space to get into a sleep cycle, basically. But you will feel absolutely disgusting when you wake up, and it's getting through that as well.
Hmm. Okay, I like it. I'm gonna implement that.
What a better way to break out of it than put on your shoes and start running for another 26 hours.
Embrace the suck.
Embrace that suck, Scott Warr. You've got the final say.
My last article is just a short little half page article.
Yes.
It is entitled "Going Green."
Going green,
going green.
Oh, okay.
This isn't as cryptic as my last article.
Go ahead, Michelle.
I would say, obviously, all of these races are now going cupless and going green. So you have to bring your own hydration. So that's my guess. You're talking about races going green.
So far, that's the strongest guess. Warren, do you have any thoughts? I'm lagging here.
I think Scott is wading into the tricky balance that is ultra running and trail running, where we delight in the beauty of returning to and being restored by and experiencing and strengthened by the wonders of nature, and yet we do it by making use of products, whether they are shoes or packaging or anything, that may not be quite so good for that environment through which we love to run, and that is a tricky conundrum for any ultra runner to try and balance.
I think he's just talking about this next color of his car. I don't know. What is it, Scott?
Well,
new green T-shirt.
Actually, I like
Spirulina.
Both answers are very strong.
Wait, there's three guesses, Scott.
Well, two of the three were very strong.
Yeah.
And Michelle's is actually right on the nail. But I like Warren's subject better.
Did
so
I
actually may rewrite the article to skew more towards Warren's. But you know, I think it is interesting. We do have more races that are going cupless, so you have to bring your own cup. Mm-hmm. And there's two or three companies that make a disposable. It's not a disposable, a reusable cup. There's also some races that, in order to be more green, are reusing swag. So there's a couple races, Chuckanut, which actually happens to be one of the cupless races. They're one of the first ones to do a cupless race. They're also one of the ultras. And then there's one of the biggest 10Ks in the country, in the United States, is called the Boulder. And both of those races give an option to the runners when they sign up to opt out of the race shirt. So, you know, these people that run 50 races a year, they don't need another technical shirt. And so these races give the option to do without that swag, as well as you can imagine, in a lot of these races, there's a lot of leftover stuff. People leave aid station bags. And some of these races are donating the used stuff after a period of time for people to claim them. They're giving those to like a Goodwill or a charity so that the stuff isn't just getting thrown into the garbage. Which I think is awesome.
I think that's a great idea because and this will be a shameless plug, but I believe it's so well worth it for a friend of mine who has founded and is pioneering a company called Kusaga Athletic, KUSAGA, making what they call future fabrics and sustainable sportswear and clothing. Because when he discovered how many thousand, it literally is 1,000 liters of water it takes to make a cotton t-shirt, and sports t-shirts aren't that far behind. What that does to the planet is little short of catastrophic. And what he set out to do is he's literally come up with t-shirts and fabrics that take a fractional percentage of that water use, yet still create performance. They, you know, they've got better wicking performance. They've got all sorts of other things. So the environmental impact of so much of what we do is has to be taken into account these days. And even on our own side at 33 Shake, all of the packaging always had to be recyclable. It didn't matter what it cost. It had to be as light as we could get it, as recyclable as we could get it. It's one of the reasons that you add your own water, or if you want to change the flavor, add coffee or fruit juice or whatever to our gels, so we're not shipping unnecessary water weight around the world, because that's just a carbon burn up that nobody needs. So there are better ways to do it. And, you know, the cupless race, the t-shirtless race, maybe a switch of t-shirts to something better. Right. We don't need as much of the stuff as is out there, and bringing that consciousness that we bring to our running to the way that we interact with the products we use and that footprint we create, I think it's a really powerful thing to do. So, and I think you should definitely buy a green car as well, Scott. That would be great.
Thank you. Thank you very much for recognizing my input.
I'm just curious, who let's go around the horn. Who has been to a race that has been cupless? I have never been to a race that's cupless.
I've been to a race that's been cupless, and I didn't use the cup because
you didn't have one. I assume you did not bring one.
No, I had. They give you one. Ultraspire, I believe, sponsored and had a plastic collapsible cup. No, I just at the aid station, I just chose to take the lid off a 20-ounce bottle, and I just filled that. It was more efficient, more quick, and that's what I did. But I like the idea.
How about you, Warren? Are there cupless races over the pond?
Well, as you know now, that fell running is always cupless because they just spit the tea in your face. So you don't need much of a cup for that. But UTMB, as far back as I can remember, has been cupless and all its associate races. And initially, that meant I used to use a child's drinking beaker from my nephew that I really liked, because you had to have your own cup. And that was the only thing I could find that was about the right size. And no one was making collapsible ones yet, because it was 1804 or whenever it was I first ran it. And so I used this child's drinking beaker that had a tortoise and a hare on it. It could not have been more perfect. And I drilled a hole in it and I put a little loop on it, and it had a little clip that went straight into the side of my backpack, because race vests didn't exist either. So every time you wanted to get something, you had to take your pack off. There's a lot of cupless races, and it's great to see more and more of them. It's also good to see that the cups have got a lot smaller too. My child's drinking beaker no longer comes out on race day.
But why would you need to bring a cup? You can just refill your flask or whatever. Like, how long have you been running, Warren? Are you serious about that?
No, it wasn't actually 1804. No, that was
oh, good. Was it? You must be like Rumpelstiltskin, bro.
He's Rumpelstiltskin.
No.
Spinning your straw into gold.
I just haven't slept for a long time, so my sleep adjusted age is about 106. But no, that worked. I had a bladder that I used, and just a cup, because you had to bring a cup, and that's all I had. But I didn't use any, I didn't have any bottles or anything like that. I could have used as a cup.
The race I just did, like my last one in Mexico, they didn't have any cups. So they were just actually handing out huge plastic bottles of water at every aid station. And then people would take like two sips and throw it on the ground. So So by mile 30, there was just like plastic bottles everywhere. It was crazy.
Yeah, that's
but
not,
other than that, like, yeah.
That's not green at all. That's the opposite of green, whatever the opposite of green is.
Yeah, you, like, that's how you kind of found your way on the trail. You just follow, like, the millions of water, empty water bottles, half drink. Even in this, my friend Ryan's video he made, you know, he was climbing up something and got lost, ran out of water, and he just take the water off the ground that someone took a sip out of and drank the rest of it. But it's a little different.
Well, has anyone done a triathlon at all lately, or like an Ironman distance triathlon? I'd be interested to know if they're still doing what they used to do with the water bottles on the bike leg for that. Has anyone done one lately?
What did they used to do? No. But the answer is no. We have not dabbled in the tri.
Well, what they did, and it makes sense logistically, is you have your water bottle on your bike, and as you come to the aid station, there's a load of people ready to hand you a fresh one because you want to keep going. So they hand you the fresh bottle, and you toss the one that was on your bike. And that means that for each competitor, there's at least four non-recyclable water bottles. And even if they are recyclable, the amount of plastic that's going to be introduced by every single Ironman race, you know, of which there are now several thousand around the world, doing that is just such a dent. I mean, there's got to be a way around that. I wondered if they got their heads around it and maybe just decided that, well, I don't know, everyone has to top up and it's a disadvantage for everyone. I just don't know. But that, looking back on it, the plastic wastage there is just horrible. A bit, you know, it's a worse version of that water bottle story you were talking about, Michelle.
I'm going to throw, go ahead, yeah. Michelle, and then I'm going to throw a tip out there.
Okay. Oh, no, I agree. It's pretty bad. Like, you would think in this day and age that would not be happening, that people would use their brains to, like, somehow figure out an option that didn't have so much waste of plastic and things at one race.
Speaking of efficiency and topping off, putting some ounces in the belly and not just in your bottle, that it's, you know, coming into an aid station, maybe needing, timing it where you need a little fluid and then dumping some excess at that aid station, then going out. You don't have to carry all of your fluid in a bottle. That the aid station is a good place to put a few bottles down, a quick bottle or two in a long race that you know there's not going to be a station for a while and it's quite hot. It's good to top off and put some extra in at an aid station. Nothing wrong with that. That's good insurance. So there's my tip of the day, if it's a tip. If you guys are probably already doing it, I'm probably the only guy who just thought he discovered the wheel, right? And look, here's a fire.
Sure. You always want to come into the aid station like empty and then top it off.
Yep, top yourself off too. Not only your hydration pack. Yep, top it off. 40
Absolutely.
In the fist, 40
that's
in the belly.
Super important.
Yeah. Hey, thanks, Michelle.
Whoa, I couldn't. 40 in the belly is kind of a lot.
Well, you got a big belly over here. this isn't extra. This is to hold my fluid.
It's a bladder.
It's a bladder.
You do not drink 40 ounces at an aid station. There's no way.
You just threw down the gauntlet, Michelle. I think Don is now challenged. Hey, he does not back down from a challenge.
I can drink 40 ounces of Starbucks.
At the 200 distance, when there's, you know, 6 hours between aid stations, you bet you have time to put 40 down and waddle on out.
And I know that Warren could drink, like, 40 ounces or 50 of the 33 shake.
Oh, yes. It's good stuff and healthy.
I would never stop with that, Michelle. And I'm sure you've obviously been trying it regularly, but I'll make sure we get your supplies topped up for in case you need that 40 ounces when you're going. You could rock on with something.
Thank you. I would love to.
This is what is this? Our fourth edition audio magazine, and we have time to create a cover for it, Scott.
Well, of course, you'd commit me to doing that.
on the podcast, and you have a link to what were you going to link, Warren? You had a great TED talk.
I have that. You need to send me your articles, the two that you had.
Okay, good. So we'll have references.
And I have my two.
Good. So the show notes will be rich.
Yeah, so if you never have looked at the show notes, this is the episode to look at the show notes.
Now, just for a moment, Scott is offended when he doesn't get his show notes looked at. I literally have to go look at them several different times.
He so edits he can, them to make sure the spelling is correct.
So he can see how many downloads he gets on his show notes. And so do me a favor and pitch in and go weigh in a little bit on Scott's show notes. Thank you.
Whatever.
Yeah, but you should do an incentive.
Go ahead, Warren.
Yeah, I've often missed listening to entire shows and lost days because I just opened one show note and they're compulsive. And before I know it, it's 4 hours later. They are that good. You find
down the rabbit hole you go. Michelle, help us out. We're going to wrap this thing up.
Well, I was just saying that maybe you could, like, since Scott is so into the show notes, maybe you could, like, do a contest and, like, well, I don't know if you can track who looks at your stuff, but you can, like, give out a pair of those headphones to, like, a random person. But you might get, like, a lot more people taking a look at the show notes.
We have no way to know who looks at the show notes.
So we tell them. So
and the one
well,
person that
and
the one and the one person that read the one person that reads the show notes will be the winner.
So Warren Pohl, what's next for you? What we've got? What do you have going on in 33 Shake World? Are you coming out to the U.S. again? What's your schedule look like?
Schedule. It's absolutely beautiful and crazy with a trip out to the U.S. very, very soon. There are some other big things that are keeping us here a month or so longer than we expected, and I look forward to sharing them with you shortly. But they're so exciting, and we haven't actually even finished working out exactly how they're going to shake down yet. But the plan is for not just increasing the scope and reach of 33 Shake, but increasing the scope and reach of it exponentially. Which is kind of what we hold up here in Spain at the moment. The beautiful flip side of that is, as opposed to running in London, I actually have the most gorgeous trail, not more than 2 minutes from my front door here, which is absolutely beautiful. So a bit of that, and looking forward to seeing you guys out there very soon. When are you coming to London anyway?
Right
you
after.
Keep praying. Now is a really good time. We've screwed our economy. You should come over while it's cheap.
Hey, we do want to mention that 33 Shake now is available. The post pre and post workout shakes are available here in the U.S. They have the original flavor, the cacao flavor, and the mocha flavor. So if you haven't tried those, I know a lot of people have tried the 33 Shake gels, which are amazing. But try these pre and post workout shakes too. They're available now in the U.S.
Michelle, what about you? What's coming up for you? I understand you have a race you're training for.
Yeah, I'm going to be running Sinister 7 in Canada. It's going to be pretty good competition. Even Hal Corner is going to go over there and some solid Canadian runners. And so that's pretty much what I'm doing, and might throw in some torturous race before Sinister 7. And then I'll have a few more races after.
When is Sinister 7, and how long is it? Distance.
That's a 100-mile race. They also have, like, a relay. It's actually the biggest ultra in Canada. This is in Alberta, and I believe there's about 1,300 runners. There's 300 soloists so far signed up, and most are relay. You know, so there's seven sections to the race, and if you have a team, you can do 10K, 20K, 50K, whatever you want, kind of split it up how you want. But I ran it 3 years ago and it was beautiful, so looking forward to it. It's the 10th anniversary this year.
Well, cool. Well, we hope that you had a good time reading this audio version of the Trail Runner Nation magazine, and make sure you go out and run.
Moss.